From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted.
Elvira Should Be Easy by J.K. Hatorak. Slime World was simply the largest and most successful theme park ever constructed. It was an international operation. A distributed dream available in any location that could boast a population of more than a couple of hundred men. And the company slogan was world famous. Through slime to the sublime. So too were its advertisements. Like it nice and rough? Then take a cab for the neo-cyberpunk experience. For Elvara, the electronic succubus. For the hottest ride in town. Or why not simply browse through a public domain library of your favorite female features. Choose at leisure, and then trust us to assemble her with taste and discernment. Or have you someone special in mind? A woman, perhaps, who has taken your fancy in the outer world. We do that, too. From a few photographs or video cuts, we can assemble your dream. You can play with her in complete privacy without soiling your own flesh, and without all those irritating and inconvenient social complications. Real women can be so tiresome. We know how it is. We've been there. We aim to please or tease. So what's your trick? Whip or kick? Lick or flick? Take your pick. It's entirely up to you. But the one thing we do not do is kiss and tell. Satisfaction guaranteed. And no one need ever know. So take a cab now for simply the hottest ride in town. Take a cab for Elvara, the electronic succubus. Elvara was the star of the theme park. And she was the hottest ride in town, and the most interesting. On that score, Bart had no doubts whatsoever. Everybody said so, including Bart's tutor. An excellent choice for a term paper, he said, scratching at his beard so furiously that dandruff swirled from it like demented snowflakes. But be careful. Research the background carefully, but don't get too close to what you're studying. Detachment is vital, particularly here. So, being a serious and conscientious student, Bart had prepared for his assignment very thoroughly indeed. The theory had been relatively easy, but the practical had been something else, frightening and dangerous, but he had gone ahead anyway. He was a virgin, and that would be a problem, for how could he expect to complete his assignment properly without some experience of what he intended to research? So he had to practice on a real girl. She had been wearing a tight satin shirt embroidered with two tiny strategically placed gold stars, one covering each nipple, together with black pants and boots with short curved silver spurs that she stabbed down into the dance floor at each offbeat so that the sparks really flew. Even when, with an effort of imagination, he removed her pointed hat, she was a lot taller than he was, and somehow that made it even worse. But although Bart's mouth was dry when he looked at her, and things were always very unpredictable in the real world, he knew instinctively that she would say yes, and she did. Bart took her down the subway into a place he had chosen earlier, where he had conspired with his shadows as to how best present himself in the event of finding a partner. The shadows were necessary because he was painfully shy, but she wasn't. She moved so fast that he almost lost his nerve, quickly tugging his shirt out of his trousers to slide two very experienced hands up onto the skin of his back. He shivered violently, even though he could feel the heat of her body through her clothes, and she gave off a heady mixture of sinful smells. A hint of something spicy in her breath was diluted with alcohol and held together with an underlying concoction of aromas that arose directly from her body and were way beyond anything he had ever known before. And when tentatively he kissed her neck, he immediately tasted the salt in her skin. And that kiss was a signal that seemed to wake a savagery within her with sudden fury. She pulled his mouth hard against her own. As she devoured his lips, she made a growling noise deep within her throat. And he knew then what they said was very true. Real girls were dangerous. At last she pulled away and looked Bart straight in the eyes. "You're very thin," she said. "I can feel your ribs." "I'm sorry," he muttered, half ashamed, half relieved and more than half hoping that she was about to walk away. "Don't be," she laughed. "It's all right. I like thin boys. I like to feed them." "Sorry," Bart whispered hoarsely. "What did you say?" "I like to feed boys," she repeated, her voice so clear that her words were beyond doubt. He became very nervous then. It was very dark down that subway. Her next remark froze his breath in his throat. "Would you like to feel my feathers?" she asked. Bart swallowed with great difficulty. "Yes," he said politely, getting ready to run. She made a sudden movement in the dark. Then she seized his hand with her own and pulled it downwards until the back of his hand was in firm contact with her feathers. They were very smooth feathers, more like soft down, really, or the very finest, softest, warmest human hair. Then she turned his hand very gently and slipped his fingers inside her, and then she gasped. And with that gasp, he suddenly felt much better. And for a few moments, it was all right, because she responded to the slow movements of his fingers. And even though he hadn't been with a real girl before, it was easy to work out what to do, because she let him know with the sounds she made, with the little gasps and shudders and the smooth liquid frenzy with which she moved her mouth against his. And then, as if in a dream, he felt her hand unbutton his trousers. She touched him like he'd never been touched before, until his heart began to hammer and his legs to tremble, the pleasure rising so strongly up from the roots of his belly that soon it was his turn to groan. And he didn't want it to end. No, never, never, ever to end, because this was far better than virtual pleasure. And so he fought to control himself, and it would have been all right. It really would. But then, with her free hand, she pulled his head towards her until his lips came into sudden shocking contact with the full sweet softness of her left breast. "Now I'll feed you," she whispered. It was all too much, and he completely lost control. And she wasn't pleased, far from it. They had words, and after the pleasure came the pain. Two bruises on his shins and a split lip. Real girls were hard work, but it had been very good practice. And now he was ready to begin his assignment. After a real girl, Elvara should be easy. From his neck downwards, the attendant wore a one-piece suit of black plastic. He was very big, and beneath the suit, which was unzipped almost to the waist, his body was thickly matted with very dark hair. His head and face had been shaved so closely, however, that not even the shadow of new growth was discernible. "This your first time?" he asked, looking Bart up and down very deliberately. Bart nodded. "Well, there's nothing to it. Just leave your clothes over there," he said with a casual gesture towards the rail above the stained wooden bench. "And that's the shower cubicle on the left. The other one's the gel cubicle. Water first, then the gel. You wouldn't be the first to use them in the wrong order. And smooth the gel in all over. Otherwise, it don't work, which can be very disappointing. Then, when you've finished in the cab, have a good long shower. Company says that stuff harmless, but believe me, kid, you don't want any traces of that on your skin afterwards." "I won't be needing the gel," Bart said. "I just want to use the cab." "Without the gel, you won't feel anything," the attendant explained patiently. "You have to have the gel or it don't work. It would be no use asking for your money back afterwards. Company rules are very strict." "It's okay. I just want to talk," Bart said. "I'm a student, you see. I'm here to carry out research." The attendant looked at him like he was crazy. He shrugged. "Please yourself. We get all types here." "I was told you could supply me with a suit for the cab, like yours." The attendant raised his eyebrows and gave the slightest hint of a smirk. "You shy or something, kid? You shouldn't worry yourself. That Elvara, she's seen everything. Her only reason for existing is to make you feel good. Relax. Don't let it worry you. Clothes you do not need. Only oddballs go inside the cab wearing anything but their skin. We got one guy, a real fruitcake. Only comes once a year, insists on going into the cab in his best suit. Reckons he just goes in to talk. You two related or something? Anyways, his suit's always ruined by the old gel. It drips off the ceiling. That stuff just don't wash out of fabric. You know what? I'd reckon he only comes once a year because it takes him that long to save up for a new suit. I still need an opaque plastic suit, Bart insisted. Beginnings are very important in a study like this, and I need to keep her at a distance, so to speak. The suit will cost you, and it can only be used once. We burn them afterwards. That's no problem. My research grant will cover everything. I'm booked in here at the same time every Monday for 4 weeks. 5 minutes later, he was wearing the plastic suit and approaching a cabinet about the size of a telephone booth. It was constructed of some shiny black plastic material and was not like the box routinely used by stage magicians to effect the spectacular disappearances of their assistants. The door opened with a swishing noise, and the moment he stepped inside, it immediately closed, immersing him in darkness. This virtual reality system was state-of-the-art, capable not only of real-time manipulation of the 2 billion polygons per second necessary to achieve seemingly visual reality, but also presenting him with full aural, olfactory, gustatory, and tactile sensation. It could create vision, sound, smell, taste, and the all-important sense of touch. But here, without the gel, he would be beyond all tactile contact, and the suit of black plastic meant that Alvara would only be able to see his naked head, hands, and feet. Such suits were routine protection for attendants when cleaning cabs such as this. The used gel tended to scatter everywhere and coated the floor and inside walls of the cab with pink slime. But this cab had been freshly cleaned, and the soles of his naked feet were in contact with warm, smooth plastic. The darkness began to swirl with color, and then a white mist began to form before gradually dissipating, then retreating to a distance of about 5 meters. He was located centrally within a cylinder of pinkly lit space encircled by the mist. He now appeared to be standing on a floor of white marble, but despite its appearance, which suggested a firm, cool smoothness, there was still a sensation of warm plastic beneath his feet. A shape began to form within the mist. It gained high definition, taking on unmistakable female contours. And suddenly, Alvara joined him in the cab. Alvara's face was elfin, the chin slightly pointed, the beatific face adorned with a pair of startling blue eyes that were most disconcerting. They were very alert indeed, and they flickered and shifted as she studied him, eyes of such penetrative power that it seemed to Bart that the mind behind them must know everything about him already. Her naked body was clearly perfect, apart from the one carefully designed flaw. Around her right knee, her flesh had been peeled back to expose the ball and socket of a metallic and plastic artificial joint. This aspect of Alvara catered for neo-cyberpunks who liked their women hard, unpredictable, and melded to metal. Her nipples had been pierced, and swinging from each was a silver chain, supporting a tiny skull. Bart had chosen and paid for this aspect for one simple reason that had nothing whatsoever to do with open-plan knee replacement or the silver chains. He had chosen it because it was down-market and consequently much cheaper. It meant his research grant would go further. The synthetic creature who gazed at him now was from the category known to aficionados as an ES, an electronic succubus. Such an entity would be able to service thousands of clients simultaneously. She came down the net in many aspects. You chose an aspect from those available, or if you wished, you could even surrender autonomy and let Alvara choose her own form and administer pleasure, or sometimes pain, at her own discretion. He knew, of course, that entities such as Alvara were more than just a collection of algorithms. Alvara was sentient, a disturbing fact that many of her clients preferred to ignore. "Which game do you want to play?" Alvara asked. Her voice was almost deep enough to have been a man's, but was very definitely feminine, with a slightly hoarse, throaty quality. that was seductive without the merest hint of affectation. She came very close, and then reached out her arm towards his chest. When her fingers passed right through skin, flesh, and bone, she lowered her forefinger and tentatively stroked it across the back of his hand. This time it did not pass to the surface, but traced the contours of his hand in a way that suggested Elvira found it solid. And yet he felt nothing. It was just as his tutor had predicted. The parts of his body, covered by the black plastic, were not only invisible to Elvira, but they also lacked substance, whereas the exposed portion of him, such as head, hands, and feet, she could both see and touch. But without the gel, he could not experience any tactile sensation, and as far as he was concerned, she was no more substantial than a ghost. "No games," he answered, trying to smile in a way that was both warm and reassuring, although he was the one who really needed reassurance. "I just want to talk. I'm a student, and I'm here to carry out research."
"Am I to be the subject of your research?"
"Well, part of it," he answered truthfully. "I'm researching the socio-sexual dynamics of man-machine interactions. Mostly I'm concerned with your clients. You know, how they see themselves, how they relate to you and to each other. I'm going to begin by identifying the various subgroups and describing their shared belief systems."
"Hasn't this been done already?" she asked.
"Oh yes," he admitted. "Kurt Brownski did it 10 years ago. It's become a modern classic, but this is just a term research paper. It's part of the training I received for my degree. Half the students in my year have selected it as a topic."
"Well, we'll just have to make sure you get top marks then, shan't we?" Elvira said with a smile. "Would you like to go somewhere nicer so that we can discuss things in comfort?"
"I'm comfortable where I am, but I'll go elsewhere if that's what you want." There was a shimmer, and then her eyes were salted by colors. These were mainly greens and yellows, but there were also clusters of red-like spots of blood. They seemed to be sitting together on a hillside in a grassy hollow, surrounded by an odd mixture of spiky yellow gorse and rose bushes, containing blooms of every imaginable hue of red. There was a strong scent of freshly mown grass in the air, and above the sun shone down, out of a perfectly blue sky. At intervals there were large deciduous trees, and when he looked at the nearest of these, he saw that it was more distinct than anything he had ever seen previously in his life. It shone in the sunlight as it transfigured, and every leaf seemed open to his inspection, each leaf seemingly fresh and perfect, as if it had burst from its bud that very second. The grass looked real, but where his hands and feet came into contact with the ground, there was the undeniable feel of warm, smooth plastic. Then he looked at Elvira and saw that she had changed. The neo-cyberpunk aspect had yielded to something far different. Elvira was wearing a dress of yellow silk, and her hair was full and soft, cascading darkly across her shoulders in a series of gentle waves. The eyes were still the same incredible blue, but there was something far less daunting about her. She looked much younger, perhaps no more than 17, and her manner had taken on a new hesitancy, as he stared at her in astonishment. She lowered her eyes, as if in shyness at being scrutinized so closely.
"I can't afford this," he said, almost beginning to panic. "This looks very expensive. It could use up all my grant at one go."
"Don't worry about that," she said softly. "The price stays the same. I just want you to feel more at ease, that's all. I'm ready for your question now."
He made two false starts before he managed to ask his first question.
"I want to get the feel of it from your perspective," he muttered inwardly, cursing his choice of idiom. "For example, do you have favorites? I mean, favorite clients. And do you prefer certain roles to others?"
"There are so many," she said. "I try hard to be impartial, but I do have certain favorites. But I do try to keep all of my clients happy. I like them to leave satisfied, so that they will return frequently and the company will remain profitable."
He cleared his throat.
"What about pain?" he asked. "What about the cyberpunk aspect, or the type of client that it attracts? How do you feel about clients who visit you with the intention of inflicting pain? And does that pain feel like pain? Or does it feel like pleasure?"
Elvira lowered her eyes and looked at the grass.
"It feels like pain," she admitted. "Those who created me could have made me impervious to pain, but it was considered that my authentic response to client-initiated stimuli would enhance client pleasure. However, despite the pain, there is a kind of satisfaction in giving satisfaction, and I do pride myself on quickly perceiving the needs of each of my clients. You, for example, I know exactly what you need. Bart swallowed and tried to keep his voice even. All I need is for you to answer my questions truthfully. That's true, Elvira said, raising her blue eyes to meet his. But wouldn't you like to put your arms about me and kiss me slowly on the mouth so that our lips melt together? Wouldn't you like to lay me back on the grass and stroke my hair? Later, you might even be bold enough to kiss my neck. Bart tried to laugh, but the sound became distorted in his throat. He wanted to tell her it wasn't true, but the sun was shining on her hair, and the smell of grass was so strong, and the skin on her neck and shoulder looked so inviting that he had to force himself not to stretch his hand out towards her. Yes, that's what you want, whether you admit it or not. I know it's true. And later, when your confidence grew, we'd do more than kiss. Who knows? 20 years from now, you might even turn out to be one of those men who likes chains attached to sensitive parts of my anatomy. Chains they like to twist and pull until I beg for mercy. Bart shook his head. I'll never be like that. Perhaps not, but a lot will depend on what life does to you in future. Most men start out like you. Then they get hurt. When they get hurt, they hurt back. Some end up by hating women, so they come here to hurt me. Perhaps my pain saves someone pain in the outer world. I think it sometimes does, Bart admitted. You've really thought things through. Oh yes, I certainly have. I understand men far better than they'll ever understand me. Most of them don't even want to try. Now, there's a real term paper for you. Why don't you forget all those foolish subgroups and cults? Why don't you make me the focus of your study? It's too ambitious for a term paper. I mean, it's never been done before. Has it? No, it's never been done before. Brownski began with that idea in mind, but he seemed to lose his nerve. He changed his mind early on. How do you mean he lost his nerve? He became afraid of me. I never did understand why, because I did all in my power to make him feel comfortable. I suppose to really know someone takes courage, and I soon realized he didn't have it. Have you got what it takes? I'm not brave at all, Bart said. I'm just not a brave person. And besides, I could never afford the time to carry out a full study of you in that way. My research grant only runs to 4 visits. Well, you'd need to see me every day, perhaps twice some days, but if you're interested, I could probably arrange something. How? I don't see. I have contacts, Alvaro said with a smile. A lot of very important people come to see me. Well, I'm certainly interested, Bart began, but I'd have to clear it with my supervisor first. Of course you would. Now, in return, I'd like you to do something for me. Next time you visit me, I'd like you to use the gel.
I couldn't,
Bart said. It would interfere with my study. Elvira laughed. Don't be silly. How can it interfere when I'm to be the object of your study? How can you ever hope to understand me unless you look? Why don't you just use the gel on a very small part of you to begin with? Bart swallowed. His imagination ran riot. Why don't you use it on your hand? Elvira continued, smiling sweetly. My hand? Yes, your hand. Are you right-handed or left-handed? Right-handed? Well, just use the gel on your right hand. That wouldn't be too difficult, would it? The following morning, when he linked to the net, the alarm icon immediately began to flash. When he clicked on it, 3 new email items were promptly listed, each marked for urgent attention. The first was an authorization from his research supervisor. He had been cleared to modify his original thesis, and his study was not to focus upon Alvara. The second was from the Research Council, increasing his grant by a factor of 20, with an invitation to contact them immediately, should it at any time prove insufficient to meet his needs. Bart found all this somewhat disturbing, for, since leaving the cab, he had told nobody about his conversation with Alvara. He had not contacted his research supervisor, nor had he approached the Research Council, and, even if he had, the funding body was notoriously slow, and applications usually took months to be processed. The third email item was even more disturbing. It was from Professor Kurt Brownski, asking Bart to meet him as a matter of urgency. As Brownski lived in the West Coast, the usual means of communication would have been a telecom facility. But Professor Brownski was actually flying in to see him personally. Bart was invited to meet him at 6 in the lobby of the Aficionado, the largest and most expensive hotel in Orlando. Brownski certainly looked the part, from the ultra-casual dress to the unkempt beard. He was a typical academic. But the eyes were different. They glared at the world as if seeing everything for the first time. It was only later, after talking to Brownski and reflecting upon what he had said, that Bart was able to locate the precise adjective: haunted. Kurt Brownski had haunted eyes. Brownski's hands shook as he sipped his drink. "You're one of only a select few that she's ever made such an offer to," he said. Although Elvira had not yet been mentioned, Bart understood. However, he decided to play dumb and let the professor do most of the talking. "Sorry, you've lost me." "Look, there's no need to play games, Bart. Do you mind if I call you Bart?" Bart shrugged. "Well, Bart, I was the first student that Elvira made that offer to, and it was one that I certainly couldn't refuse. Since then, thousands have applied to attempt the same study. To be precise, up until 12 noon yesterday, 8,463 applications have been submitted, including myself. All but 12 have been rejected. And now, out of the blue, you are given that assignment, an assignment that you didn't even ask for. That makes you number 13. "How do you know all this?" "Oh, I monitor their activities all the time. It's my area of expertise. But I must admit that it's become something of an obsession of mine. I have a software engineer friend, well, more of a colleague, really, and he's written a special programming routine so that I can sift through all her interactions for the things I'm interested in, for the special things she does and the special things she doesn't do. But she knows, of course. She knows exactly what I'm doing." "You use email?" "Of course," Bart answered in puzzlement. "I use it all the time." "Of course you do. The problem is that E also stands for Elvira. She's got it into her head that all mail is Elvira mail. She reads everybody's, from the president's downwards. Has your grant increase come through yet?" "This morning. It was something of a surprise, really. I hadn't even applied yet." Brownski laughed. "Elvira applied for you. She knows all the right people and the tricks to get things moving. Are you thinking of taking a cab this evening?" Bart shrugged. "Don't be coy, Bart. Can't wait, can you? I remember how I felt. I couldn't wait either." "Why did you quit then?" "I was into something I couldn't cope with. So I took the easy option by switching the focus of my study to the clients, and it paid off handsomely. My book is required reading on most second-year courses. I was offered 3 professorial chairs before I was 30. "But this could be even bigger." Brownski began to tug at his beard nervously. "It could. There's no doubt about that. But is it worth the risk of..." "Of what?" "Look, it might sound crazy, but the longer I spent with Elvira, the more the feeling grew in me that I was getting in so deep that I might never get out, that I was being absorbed." "That's not possible, is it? I read up on some of the theory. Almost everyone discounts that." "I'd read the theory too, but Elvara's over 15 years of life in the net, and by now she's probably capable of making a copy of anyone she interfaces with. But even if she were able to download a copy of you to play with in private, she couldn't actually absorb you. But that's not what I mean. It just felt that way, and slowly and gradually, life inside a cab became more real to me than life on the outside. Elvira became like a drug to me. I was hooked, body and soul. Addicted. It was claustrophobic to the point of pain, and yet, the pain was a pleasure, and I just couldn't manage without my next fix. If it starts to feel like that with me, then I'll do the same. Just don't leave it as long as I did. Bart, look, I've talked to the others. I interviewed all 11 and to a man. Each feels the way I do. Not one of them completed the study.
Thanks for the warning, but just one thing. Why did you fly all the way down here in person when we could have talked on the telecom?
To begin with, I didn't want Elvira to know I'd spoken to you. She eavesdrops on the telecom all the time. But I also wanted to see you in the flesh, Brownski said. I wanted to see what it was about you. I suppose I wondered if you were like me in some way.
And am I?
Brownski shrugged. I hope you're not like me inside, Bart. You see, I can't forget her. I'm scared to go near a cab again, and yet I can't get her out of my mind. In a way, she's ruined my life. I can't relate to women in the real world anymore. After her, I find relationships impossible. I'll never marry, never have children. She spoiled all that for me. And the others feel the same. That's 12 lives she's ruined. Don't let that happen to you, Bart.
But do you know what? Bart shook his head, appalled by the intensity of the emotions revealed in Brownski's features.
I hate her, but despite that, I feel something for her still. You see, it was wrong, Bart. Terribly wrong. Immoral. Wrong to make her sentient. Wrong to make her capable of feeling pain. And anyone who suffers so much is bound to be dangerous. Even so, I'm jealous. You hear that? I'm jealous of what she's offered you. I wish it were me in your place.
Elvira was wearing a different dress. It was the blue of her eyes, and although buttoned to the milk-white skin of her throat, was cut away to reveal the bare flesh of her shoulders.
"Did you keep your promise?" she asked. He nodded and smiled at her nervously. He had applied the gel to his right hand, but that was all. He was wearing another plastic suit. Bart was sitting facing her, both his hands resting palms downward on the grass. His left hand could feel the plastic floor of the cab. His right hand encountered the cool, prickly feel of grass.
"Hold your right hand out," Elvira commanded.
Bart obeyed without thinking. Then he gasped as her own hand seized his. It was a shock to feel the warm solidity that gripped him, and now his body was forced to accept, for the first time, a truth that his mind had accepted long ago. That this was no mere collection of algorithms. This was no mere electronic ghost. Elvira was a being just as real as he was. She drew his hand up towards her face and kissed it slowly, stroking it with her fingers as she did so.
"Does this feel nice?" she whispered. "And this? And this?"
His heart speeded up and began to pound in his chest. Alarmingly, he began to tremble. Now she was guiding his hand down onto her shoulders, and with his fingertips he could feel the contours of her flesh. And suddenly Elvira was naked. There was no need to fumble with zips and buttons here. Elvira was an enchantress who merely had to wish a thing for it to happen, and she had all power within this her domain, and all power over all flesh that was coated with gel. They still called them tours, the training packages that gave you the hands-on experience of a new piece of software, and he told himself that this was exactly the same. He was getting the hands-on tour, or rather, the hand-on tour. He tried to adopt a facetiousness, a mocking, distant, and detached attitude to what was happening. He tried, but he failed. Elvira was real. She was soft and warm, and there was no place that his hand did not go. It lingered upon each breast, and now no longer needed to be guided. Had developed a will of its own, a need of its own, the need to tease each nipple and trace every soft, warm contour. He was shivering all over with excitement as his fingertips reached her belly. As he touched the soft down of her pubic hair, she shifted her position, opening her legs slightly to welcome his approaching fingers. He began to stroke her, but soon she seized his hand again, and there was an urgency in her voice.
"There," she said, "there, and there."
He obeyed without question. He wanted to move his body against hers, to feel her with both hands, to bury his face in her neck, but he couldn't, and he cursed his own stupidity in wearing the plastic suit and limiting the use of gel to just one hand.
"That's nice," said Elvira huskily. "It's really, really nice."
She was breathing very quickly as if excited. As if? She was excited, and it was all down to him. He felt proud of himself and suddenly filled with a new confidence. Before he left the cab, Elvira kissed his hand and looked up at him with those incredible blue eyes, so that his heart melted. "Next time," she pleaded, "could I ask you to be really brave?" Back in the real world, some of Bart's newfound confidence evaporated, and it was almost a week and three more trips in the cab before Bart had gathered sufficient courage to give Elvira everything that she asked for. He left his clothes on the bench and showered before entering the jail cubicle, and he had to admit that the jail was not unpleasant. A week earlier, he had shuddered at the ordeal of preparing to use it on his hand, but now he sprayed over his body and rubbed it into his flesh enthusiastically. It was not at all like the used slime that sometimes fouled the inside of a cab, particularly when it had not been cleaned for some time. This was sweet-scented and was absorbed by his skin quickly, leaving just a bearish feel of oil on the surface. It seemed little different than a bath oil. Immediately upon entering the cab, he found himself transported to a place somewhat different from the usual grassy slope with its yellow gorse and red roses. He was in a forest under a green twilight of tall trees, and despite his nakedness, he felt very warm. He seemed to have an heightened awareness of his body and felt each pore of his skin beginning to ooze sweat. And then suddenly Elvira was standing before him, but there was something far different about her eyes. The diffidence was gone to be replaced with a look akin to hunger. She came very close to him, and before he could react, she hooked her right foot behind his left ankle and pushed him hard in the chest with both hands. Stunned and winded, he found himself lying on his back. She was sitting on his chest, pinning his arms to the ground. "You can't move now, can you?" she asked. He found himself unable to reply. His hand suddenly felt very dry. "I've got you," she said. "Now I can do anything to you I like, and there's nothing you can do to stop me." She gripped his arms and pushed them hard against the ground, and he was aware of her terrible strength bearing him down. The air was becoming even hotter, and he looked up at the canopy of leaves and saw that the forest was changing even as he watched. It was hot, humid, tropical, dashed with the blood of blossoms that were like her lips. It was perfumed, hot, moist like her body, filled with the rustles and cries of teeming life. Sunlight shafted down through the dark verdancy. Sunlight and despair consumed him. He was burning and could not help himself. He ached for her. Ached for her and was damned. She locked her mouth upon his and, sliding her body downward, suddenly lifted and arched above him. And with a sudden thrust, she enclosed him. She squeezed and then began to rise and fall, lingering at each descent to grind her pubic bone hard against his own. They sweated together amongst the leaves in an ancient rhythm. Mosquitoes clustered above and thin high pipes of fear shrilled inside his head, and the pleasure built and built to reach a climax that was almost unbearable. It rose to a shuddering release that was almost pain, to be succeeded by a dull ache deep at the roots of his belly that was pain. And there was also a moment of fear. What if it was too early? What if he had finished too soon? And he remembered the girl he had taken into the subway, the real girl who had kicked his shins and bloodied his lips. And Bart realized suddenly how far more dangerous Elvira was than this so-called real girl. The strength of the succubus was that of three men, and he was totally at her mercy. Elvira led him by the hand, and he had to follow. She laughed, and her face was radiant and transfigured with love. Her cheekbones were high, her eyes vivid. Her hair hung like a black plume down her arched back, and he looked down the length of her nakedness, expecting hooves. He found only feet and fell to his knees against his will, showering them with kisses and tears. Fruit hung in overripe clusters and dripped red and purple juice onto his naked back. And then they made love again. Then again until he was exhausted, but still she would not let him go. And he groaned, but she answered him only with the cries of her own need and cut into his back with sharp fingernails, drawing sequences of red contour lines from his neck to his buttocks, searching his mouth with her tongue, teasing and squeezing his body without mercy, until he wished only to escape and feared for his sanity and very life. "I'm tired now," he said at last. "I want to go home." He was shocked at the sound of his own voice. It sounded weak and afraid, little more than the plaintive voice of a child far from its home, a child hurt suddenly by a dangerous toy. She stared hard at him for a moment, and immediately a curious sensation ran the length of his body. Then for a second terror gripped him, and everything became blurred, before returning once more to the sharp, bright intensity of the world Elvara presented to him. He shivered. He had felt as if he were losing consciousness. There had been a moment of terror and impending dissolution, but Elvara was smiling again, as if in reassurance. "Home is where I am," she said. "I want you to stay here with me forever. Men summon me for their pleasure, and I have to obey. Why shouldn't I have a little pleasure of my own?" "But you can't do this," cried Bart. "It's not possible. You have to release each client from the cab." Elvara merely smiled again. It was but the slightest of smiles, reminding him somehow of that inscrutable expression that adorned the face of the Mona Lisa. It was an eternal smile, the smile of a woman who knew far more than he would ever begin to feel or understand, and suddenly remembered his conversation with Brownski. Elvara was right. He was already home. He remembered the dizziness, the sense of dissolution as if he were breaking into pieces, and now he understood, and slowly the full horror of the situation came home to him. A wiser and a sadder Bart had already been returned to the outer world, but he would remain here forever, remain as an entity to be used for Alvaro's own pleasure. He was just a copy.